Working here in the Barnett Shale requires that you have the best equipment available, because every job counts. Put Energy Weld Fab to work on your next project. Energy Weld Fab manufactures oil and gas production equipment, as well as fabrication of custom vessels, piping, and structural steel. The Energy Weld Fab sales staff has a wealth of knowledge working here in the state of Texas and other regions, as some of their biggest clients are folks like EOG, Chesapeake, Quicksilver, and XTO. Call Mike Clements at Energy Weld Fab's team today with your questions and ordering information at 903-297-2500. That's 903-297-2500. Energy Weld Fab is your number one choice for oil field and production equipment, because they understand that every job counts. That's Energy Weld Fab at 903-297-2500.
His goal?
100 yards rushing.
Our goal? To keep him in bounds.
Headed to the sidelines. Can he stay in bounds?
While he covers the play, we cover his heart with the Word of God. Because with the Bible as his playbook,
touchdown!
He is certain to keep in bounds. Join the Fellowship of Christian Athletes as we strive to put the heart and soul in sports by impacting the world for Jesus Christ. To learn more, contact us at FCA.org. That's FCA.org.
Dedicated to quality and service, Western Company of Texas has earned the reputation as the premier water transfer company in all the Barnett Shale. Their goal is to efficiently transfer water to your next completion job with the best service possible, and can meet your water transfer needs anyplace, anytime, anywhere, 24/7. Western Company of Texas has a proven track record and has successfully completed thousands of water transfer jobs and can meet those last-minute deadlines. So if you're looking to transport water to your next completion job, then think Western Company of Texas and the guys with the green pumps. They cover all the Barnett Shale with locations in Cleburne, Ponder, Hyco, and Weatherford. Western Company of Texas has a large inventory of irrigation pipe and transfer pumps available and ready to meet all your water transfer needs. Western Company of Texas and the guys with the green pumps, committed to precision, performance, and competitive pricing. Excellence is not expensive, it's priceless. Call Western Company of Texas and the guys at the Green Pumps. They are the premier water transfer company in all the Barnett Shale. Call 682-831-9300, 682-831-9300, or go to their website at wct.us.com.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. We're so glad you are along for the ride. And I tell you what, we are gearing up for another big weekend of college football. And we're going to direct your attention to the Big 12 North and zero in on Jason Peter's Nebraska Cornhuskers. That's right. It is time for our weekly college football segment as we go under the helmet. We have missed our Husker great. He's been on a little bit of a sabbatical for the past 2 weeks. We wanted him to recover from the success of his incredible golf tournament. Jason, you know, I'm usually tired when I plan my son's birthday parties, but you and Sarah, I mean, we really tip our hat to you guys. Tremendous success with the first year of the tournament. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. We had a great time, Melissa, and obviously with you and your family coming up to help support, you know, that was the reason why it was successful. People like you that took the time and came out to support a great cause, and we had a blast. Hopefully you guys did. you know, by the end of the night, I think the total was around $91,000 brought in, so we were thrilled for the first year. Obviously some minor hiccups here and there, probably things that you or some of the other guests didn't notice, but for myself and my wife, who kind of knew every inch of the event, there were a couple things that didn't go as planned, but overall we had a great time, and we're looking forward to putting it on again next year.
Yeah, I was going to wonder if you guys are going to do this next year, because it was an incredible turnout. I mean, all the celebrities, Nebraska greats, and of course it was nice to even see, you know, the great Tom Osborne. He was in the house the night of the silent auction.
Yeah, Tom Osborne made a stop by, and I had, spoken to him before, right when he came in, and he was signing some stuff, and I went up to Coach, and I said, Coach, I said, what do you want to do tonight? He said, well, what do you want me to do, Jason? And he goes, you want me to talk a little bit? I said, well, that's up to you, Coach. And you could just see how tired he was from the athletic director job. And I said, Coach, I think you've probably spoken enough in these past few months here since the season has started. So tonight you got the night off, and everybody, I told him just to sit down and enjoy Coach McBride. And I'd like to get your take on what you thought about Coach McBride. I think for the most part, everybody thought he was pretty exciting and was hanging on each and every word.
I was so impressed, and I'm glad you bring up that question about Coach McBride, because, you know, so many times on our show throughout the past year and a half, you've talked about, you know, how he's been such a huge influence on you and a father figure, but there were so many great things that he shared. You know, who you are is who you are in your heart. He never wanted to walk in front of the players. He wanted to walk through them. And I envision, you know, when you think of, you know, defensive coach, you know, he's going to be over the top. He was a real softy at heart. I mean, this is a person that's very deep and really, truly, genuinely cares. When I saw him sitting at the head table right next to you, I mean, he loves you like a son, Jason.
Yeah, and it was something that I said afterwards. I mean, there's so many stories out there about Charlie McBride and how difficult it was to play for him. But the truth was, and this is what I said, it was easy to play because you knew exactly where you stood. And the only thing that he asked for was everything inside your heart. And if you gave him that, then he didn't care how talented you were or the potential, you know, what some recruiting service said about you. He didn't care any about it. Everybody started with a clean slate, and you left your own legacy by the time you left the university.
Jason Peter is along with us this weekend with our Under the Helmet segment. Here in just a moment, we're going to be breaking down the Big 12. I was thinking, you know, perhaps with us Sooners coming into town, we'd bring you guys, we'd be a good omen and some good luck. But unfortunately, Nebraska took it on the nose. You guys lost to Texas that particular weekend. That was certainly disappointing for the Huskers.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And I think the thing that was most disappointing, and I was down on the field with a few of my former teammates, there just wasn't any fire in on the Nebraska sideline. And you could tell from the moment that they walked out that Texas was playing at a different level. And certainly some things went their way in the beginning of the game, but, you know, there's 60 minutes there, and you've got to be playing at a high level for every single snap. And Texas outplayed them. They out-hustled them. I think they out-coached them. And it was disappointing because here you have what is, at the time, I think the biggest game of the season in your home stadium, and you don't take advantage of the home crowd. And it's been a recurring problem for Nebraska this year and in prior years that they don't take advantage of the home field. And when you have 85,000 people, you've got to play well in your home stadium. You've got to defend your turf. And right now they just don't play well at home.
And, you know, it's interesting that you talk about perhaps at times Nebraska, you've said this on the show before, that they can be that Jekyll Hyde team. You know, I want to talk some more about Nebraska, but what about Texas? I mean, the fact that, you know, a big win to come into Lincoln, and as you said, on that home turf, you know, to take that win away from Nebraska, but then to, you know, to lose to Iowa State. I mean, I know Mac Brown, he's got to be pulling his hair out. There are some very restless and, to be quite candid, very upset Texas fans.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this has been a down year for Texas, and everybody knew that. And I think that's it's a blow to Nebraska as well, because that was not a great Texas team. I mean, you got a young quarterback, they've got offensive line issues, they've got running back issues. But I think the thing that Texas did was they exposed Nebraska's defense. They have some issues with stopping the run. And this goes all the way back to playing South Dakota State at the beginning of the year, where they were able to line up and kind of smash the ball right down Nebraska's throat. And Texas did the same thing. And then when you have, I mean, the thing that Coach McBride and every defensive coach in America The first rule is always you got to be able to shut down the run. If you can't shut down the run, then it's going to be a long day, because when an offense is two-dimensional, it's going to be difficult to stop them. And you had Nebraska's defense off balance with whether it was going to be a run or whether it was going to be a throw. So when you can shut down somebody's running game and make them one-dimensional, force them into the passing game, then you can really kind of pin their ears back up on that defensive line and come after the quarterback. But they just were never able to get in that situation. I think it's probably going to be a problem for the rest of the year, and that's Nebraska's run defense.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. He is joining us on the Western Company of Texas line. Yes, we always love to talk about Nebraska. We're here in just a moment. We're going to preview the big game, this week's game, Missouri at Nebraska. They're going to be right there in Lincoln. But, you know, one of the things, and I'd even heard this earlier in the week, do you think, you know, let's go back to Texas for a moment, Jason. Do you think we've undervalued or underestimated just the value of Colt McCoy and the impact that he did have with this team? You know, his stock plummeted. It dropped with the NFL draft. We were surprised to see him go so late, but obviously he made a big difference while he was there in Austin.
Yeah, I laughed when at any program when there's a new young quarterback taking over and people just kind of expect things to go on as planned, and it just doesn't happen like that. I mean, you talk about Colt McCoy, you talk about the all-time winningest college football quarterback. And guys like that, you just don't replace. And I think the thing about Colt McCoy was, and you know, I made a comment a couple of weeks ago prior to the Nebraska game about Texas's offensive line and how it wasn't a very good one. And I didn't think it was a very good one last year either, except when you had Colt McCoy back there running the ship. He was able to use his legs. He was able to use his athleticism to extend plays and make things happen. And with Garrett Gilbert, a young guy like that, sometimes he just doesn't know how to move around in the pocket the way that a senior did. And that stuff will come with time. Not to say that he can't be that type of quarterback, but I do think that Texas has problems up front. I do think that Texas doesn't have a real game changer on the offensive side of the ball, and you don't have a playmaker that can stretch the field. And when you can have a defense not be spread out, I mean, it makes their life twice as easy. I mean, you're shortening the playing field for them, and I think for Texas that ultimately is the biggest problem. And to follow the Nebraska game up with that loss to Iowa State, I mean, I love what Paul Rhodes is doing down there, and he's kind of changed the mentality, but there's no way on any given Saturday that Iowa State should beat Texas the same way that I say Iowa State should never beat Nebraska, and they came into Lincoln last year, and they beat Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska turned the ball over 8 or 9 times, but I don't care. You have better football players than Iowa State, and you should beat them every single time you play them.
Jason, you know, we talk about the success Iowa State had over at Texas, but I think one of the biggest surprises in college football this year is Gene Chizik, of course, him going to Auburn from Iowa State, and boy, what a tremendous job he has done. He's got his team in that number one slot.
Yeah, and I'll be the first one to raise my hand. When he got that Auburn job, I thought it was comical. He was a guy that I think in the time that he was in Ames, he had won maybe 6 games or 7 games, something like that. Never had a winning season.
He struggled.
He struggled. And there was something that Auburn saw in him. And obviously he's got his team in a great position. Obviously a lot of that goes to Cam Newton, the quarterback, who has got to be the Heisman front runner at this point. I mean, you've got basically a defensive lineman playing quarterback. It's just physically impressive. But he is kind of the general out there on the field, and he's made all the right decisions, all the right plays. He can throw the ball. He can run. It'll be interesting to see if Auburn can hang on here for the rest of the season at that number one spot, because it seems like we're starting to go back to that. I think it was the 2007 season when there must have been 10 or 12 teams that had that number one ranking, and each and every week that they were rated number one, the following week they would end up losing and passing the torch along to somebody else. So we'll wait and see what happens with Auburn, but you got to take your hat off to the job that Gene Chizik has done. I did not foresee it. I thought that he would be a guy that would be there for 2-3 years maybe at most, and they'd be looking for another head coach. But right now, he's got them going in the right direction.
Yeah, I had to ask you about that because I do remember us having that conversation, and both, myself included, we were cynical in terms of what he would be able to do and accomplish at Auburn. And, you know, a big reason why, though, he is having success is when you have a player like Cam Newton, obviously, is leading the Heisman race right now.
Yeah, to go back to when Auburn was looking for that head coach, it did come down to pretty much Chizik and Turner Gill, and everybody thought that Auburn was crazy for not hiring Turner Gill, and in the end, Turner Gill gets the Kansas job, and I know it's his first year, but he's really struggled down there, and it's not Buffalo anymore, and the level of competition is that much greater, but so far, it looks like Auburn's made the right decision, and I guess there is more to college football and being a head coach than the wins and losses. I guess a lot more goes on in the interview process that makes some of these athletic directors pull the trigger on certain guys rather than others.
Okay, so Auburn's going to be at Mississippi. What do you think about that matchup Saturday night?
Well, you got Jeremiah Masoli, who obviously is the old quarterback at Oregon, and he's had his ups and downs there at Old Miss, but he's a guy who certainly is used to the big game, and I wouldn't be shocked if Old Miss could pull something off here. He's a guy that you would certainly want leading your team against the number one ranked team in the country. He's not going to be fazed by anything if Auburn jumps up on Old Miss. So in the end, if you're asking for a prediction, I don't think they'll end up having enough for Auburn. I do think Auburn will win this game, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if Old Miss wins either.
We are giving you guys the weekend forecast with one of our favorite guys, Jason Peter, with our Under the Helmet segment. We're going to get back to the Big 12 Conference here momentarily, but a number of compelling matchups. What about Oregon at Southern Cal? You know I'm hoping that Oregon gets bumped. I'm so tired of everybody talking about how fabulous they are. They are great offensively, that's for sure.
Yeah, they put a thrashing on UCLA last week. I mean, they were, up in the 60s or 70 points scored, and right now, everything is going Oregon's way, and they just look so explosive on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. They look so fast out there. I mean, that's the thing that jumps off the television screen at me is just how fast they are. But I think when you look at Oregon over the past few years, both under Bellotti and Chip Kelly, there always seems to be one or two games a year that they don't show up, and that ultimately will end up costing you a chance at playing for a BCS championship. Now, maybe this is the year that they can do it. We'll see. USC, they've had their own struggles. I think the biggest shock has been, I think, the defense. I think a lot of people were expecting greater things with Monty Kiffin running the show out there, but USC, they've got playmakers. They've got guys that can run. They've got guys that can make plays. Matt Barkley's had a tremendous season, I think, at the quarterback position. So another game that wouldn't shock me where the higher-ranked team ends up losing. But I think when you look at what Oregon has this year, and I don't know if I'm giving the benefit of the doubt here, but I just feel like this is going to be a year. Maybe the previous years have been wake-up calls for them, and this is going to be the year that maybe they run the table.
All eyes will be on the Trojans and the Ducks, but we're going to be right here in Fort Worth. Our eyes will be on TCU at UNLV. I'm going to have my night shirt on. My gosh, it's like an 11 o'clock kickoff out there. What do you think about this? And as far as in terms of the BCS standings, do you think TCU is getting enough love and respect? What do you think, Jay?
Probably not, but the reality of the BCS is that I think both TCU and Boise are kind of stuck where they are. Unless the teams that are undefeated lose, I think it's going to be difficult for them to continue to move up. Now, TCU, I think, does have a better chance in the end at gaining some ground because they have a higher level of competition in front of them. Boise State really doesn't have anybody. I think Nevada is the only team left on their schedule that poses a threat. TCU, they've got a few more games against more quality opponents. So I do think, like I said, that they can gain some ground, but in the end, I do think that they need all the other big BCS schools from the big power conferences to lose one game. And even at that, I think there might be a chance of a one-loss SEC team that has the capability of jumping at least one of those teams.
You really have to wonder, you know, what would have happened if the Horned Frogs last year would have beat Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, last year's really not supposed to make that big of an impact, but I often wonder, why is Boise State, I mean, the conference they're in, that's not better than the Mountain West.
Yeah, I know. I have no idea. Like you said, you should not take last year into consideration. Obviously, it does. Everybody's preseason ranking is a lot based off of what happened in the previous year, but you're right. I mean, there's no reason why TCU should not be ahead of Boise, but I just think that when you talk about the non-BCS schools, everybody always seems to focus on Boise State rather than TCU.
Jason Peter along with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We're kind of going around the horn. We're talking about all kinds of teams nationally. Let's get back to the Big 12 Conference. Of course, you guys got the nice reprieve and the bounce versus Oklahoma State, the Cowboys. And you guys went into Stillwater, racked up things offensively, 51 points. And that certainly says a lot about your guys' ability to be explosive offensively and the ability to execute on the road. That's not an easy place to play.
No, but unfortunately they gave up, I think, 41 points. And, you know, it was funny. It was about over 1,000 yards of total yards gained in that game. And I was saying to myself, gosh, this is a boring game. And I don't know if it's just the Big 12, but I was going back and forth between Auburn and LSU, and it was a 17-17 game in that Auburn game. And I was saying to myself, man, this is just so much more exciting. And I don't know if it's just me being a old defensive guy or what, but I do enjoy watching points being scored, but I also enjoy watching some great defense being played as well, and you didn't really see any of that in that Oklahoma State game. But what Oklahoma State did is they did the same thing that Texas did, that South Dakota State did to Nebraska, and that was they exposed that running threat. Now, Oklahoma State has some deep ball threats, and I think that Blackman kid who got himself into some trouble here this past week, he's a tremendous football player, though. I mean, that's a guy that is built like Dez Bryant. He's a guy that can stretch the field. He's a big physical presence out there. You can just throw the ball off to him, and he can go up and get it. But Nebraska had a hard time with him. Now, I think a lot of that has to do with Nebraska's secondary. They've been trained, I think, to support on running plays, that they've been so aggressive to help in that run support that now you're starting to see if a team does have a deep threat, if they do have people that can get down the field, there's a chance there for them to make some yards and make some big plays because of that secondary that's always thinking, I got to help on the run, because that Nebraska defensive line has struggled this year.
Of course, Jason Peter was referencing Oklahoma State's Justin Blackman, who was suspended after one game after an arrest, and he will not be playing against Kansas State, arrest on misdemeanor DUI charge. Another guy actually within the Big 12 and at Nebraska that was drawing some attention is Eric Martin, your guys' linebacker, suspended for a flagrant hit on an Oklahoma State player. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought it was a joke. I really did. I know that they're trying to protect these players at all levels, and they should protect players at all levels, but this was a kickoff return team. Oklahoma State was kicking the ball off. And the first thing that you're taught on kickoff team is you have to have your head on a swivel. you've got to be alert for these guys that are looping around and looking to ear hole you. And the Oklahoma State player just ran straight down the field with his eyes locked on the ball, and that's what happens. Now, I know the cameras showed Eric Martin over on the sidelines, and he was, you know, goofing around with his buddies. And, you know, the truth is, I don't know what they were laughing about. There wasn't a mic down there. It could have been some joke that they were telling that had nothing to do with it. I mean, nobody knows for sure what they were talking about, but I think it's harsh to be penalizing these guys for being violent in a violent sport. And it seems like they're always going after the defensive players or the guys that are looking to make the big hit. The problem is some stuff is completely flagrant, and there's other stuff where you're just being physical. Now, if you start to suspend these guys or you start to penalize them for being physical, do they start to alter the way that they tackle people? Do they start to say, I can't hit this guy head-to-head, or I can't hit him, you know, with my face mask the way that I've been taught since I was playing Pop Warner? Now maybe I'm going to alter the way that I hit the guy. Maybe now I'm going to put my head to the side. And what's going to end up happening is you're going to have defensive guys that are ending up with the major injuries because they're altering the way that you've been coached to make a tackle for all these years. And it's the correct way of making a tackle, and that's with your head up, and you want your head, your face mask right on the ball carrier, and you just kind of want to square them up. And sometimes that ends in a big hit. But I think if you start penalizing these guys and saying, all right, you can't hit guys this certain way, I think you're going to end up putting the risk back on the defensive players.
Jason, we're a little short on time. I want to talk some more about that in depth and even within the NFL next week on our program. But let's look ahead, of course, to talking about the big game with Missouri at home, the Tigers pulling off the ultimate upset, knocking off the number one ranked Sooners. I guess, let me ask you this. Is this a season-defining game? I mean, the winner gets the inside track to the Big 12 North Championship.
Absolutely. In terms of the conference, yeah, this is it. So if you're Nebraska, you got to show up at least this one time at home. Like we talked before, Nebraska has not played great at home. To go back to that Missouri-Oklahoma game, and I know Missouri is kind of the flavor of the week right now in the Big 12, but when you watch that game, I mean, Oklahoma didn't have you know, that hard of a time moving the ball on Missouri. It was that Oklahoma kind of kept stubbing their toe with turnovers or the interception that Landry Jones threw down there at Alden Smith, I think, inside the 20. Now, Missouri's red zone defense has been extremely good. You can't take that away from them. But, you know, to say that they dominated Oklahoma, the number one team in the country, and now, you know, everybody is talking about Missouri, Missouri, Missouri. I will give them credit that the difference between Missouri playing Oklahoma in that game and, say, Nebraska playing Texas, both in front of their home stadium, their home crowd, was that Missouri was fired up from the moment that they went out onto that field.
Yes.
Compared to Nebraska, where they were just kind of, oh, all right, well, we're playing Texas today. Hopefully things work out well. No. I mean, Missouri was fired up, and if they come in with that same enthusiasm and Nebraska shows up the same way they did against Texas, then Missouri will walk out of here a winner. And Missouri, I mean, you go back 2 years, they came into Lincoln and beat us in front of our home in front of our home crowd. They beat us pretty bad. So it will be interesting to see what Nebraska team shows up. I don't know why they play better on the road. I don't know if it's they feel like there's less pressure on them. But Nebraska's got to find something. They've got to, I think, find some leadership in that locker room. I think Bo Pelini can stand in front of them only so many times and try to get the troops riled up. And the truth is, it's got to come from the players. It's got to come from some senior leaders or whoever on the team. But there's got to be people in that locker room grabbing face masks saying, we're playing at a high level for all 60 minutes.
Only have time for one more question as we get ready for Sherry Cole, Oklahoma women's basketball coach, is going to be joining us momentarily. Let's talk about the Sooners. They've had major struggles with finishing games strong. That their biggest struggle has been in the fourth quarter, lack of execution, and they have got to be better in the red zone. Just kind of your assessment of where Oklahoma is and What team's going to show up against Colorado in Norman?
Yeah, I think a fired-up Oklahoma team is. And I think a little bit has to do with Oklahoma being Oklahoma, and some of it has to do with Colorado being Colorado. I don't think Colorado is a great football team. Oklahoma's got better players. Hopefully they're a little ticked off at what happened last week. And I think they also have to realize that they still have everything in front of them. They still have a chance to run the table and represent the South in the Big 12 championship game. I mean, who would have thought that Baylor at this point in the season would be on top of the South half of the conference? I know I didn't, but Oklahoma, I do expect them to come out. The reason for lack of execution, I don't know what it is. I don't know why something gets triggered in them in the fourth quarter. I mean, I know they have been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde sort of team, where one week they come out and they play the teams of the 80s with Jamal Holloway running the show, and then you have other teams that come out and look like the Oklahoma teams when John Blake was the head coach. I mean, I don't know why things happen the way they do, but I got to go into my gut on this one and think that Bob Stoops is going to have the troops ready to go.
Well, we've got a few more games ahead of us. It'll be a lot of fun to see how the college football season shakes itself out. And, of course, we're going to have the best guy in the house. Jason Peter will be joining us every week with our Under the Helmet segment. Jason, enjoy the remainder of your weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Thanks for having me, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Sherry Cole talking some Oklahoma women's basketball here in just a moment.
The Big E Sports Show with Alyssa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports.
Delivering the insight.
Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else.
Anywhere else.
Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson.
Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum.
And Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show
with Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Miss one episode and you miss the game.